Before we get started with this episode, I want to share something that I think could be a game changer for your classroom. Now, as a former special education teacher, one of the things I struggled with the most was creating activities, resources, and curriculum for my classroom. I did not realize that that was part of my job. I have spent the last 10 years developing the Autism Helper curriculum based on what was missing from my former classroom. And now we finally have a way for school districts to purchase this curriculum directly for their teachers. The Autism Helper Curriculum Access is an annual subscription that provides access to all levels and subjects of our curriculum. This curriculum is rooted in evidence-based practices, it's aligned to the standards, and we just completed our pilot case study showing the overall effectiveness. To learn more about how your district can get curriculum access, head over to theautismhelper.com and click Curriculum Access. Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism. Welcome back to the Autism Helper podcast. I am so thrilled to share this interview with Allison Solomon. She is an ADHD parent coach, and I have to tell you, every single second of this interview, I was nodding my head. I was like, yep, love that, amazing. Allison shares so much real-world based advice. It's actionable, it's practical, but it's also like, hey, we're not gonna be perfect all the time. And honestly, as a parent, that's what I loved listening to this. Her advice is gonna be applicable to a parent, to a classroom teacher, to a clinician. I absolutely love her messaging, and I think you're going to love this interview. You can learn more from Allison at her website, allisonsolomon.com. She's also on Instagram. I'm going to share all of that in the show notes. Definitely give her a follow, and let's go ahead and hear from Allison how we should be getting curious, not furious. Hi, Allison. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Sasha. I'm so excited to be here on this podcast with you.
I'm excited about this topic you suggested. So today we're going to talk about getting curious, not furious. And I mean, I love a rhyme, so I'm already in. Can you explain a little bit what that looks like for you in everyday parenting moments?
Yeah. So I'm going to take you right into your listeners' homes. And I want you to imagine that your kid has come home from school. You've asked them to start their homework and they're procrastinating or they're playing on the phone. And in that moment, parents have one or two options. One, we can get furious and look at the child and go, oh my gosh, why can't you just get started on your homework? And when we go down that tunnel, we go down that tunnel of yelling, screaming, punishing. And really what we do is we just create massive disconnection and we make a mountain out of a molehill. Or what a parent can do is a parent can pause and get curious. And curious means looking at the child and going, wow, what is happening with my child in this moment? And how best can I support my child? And when we come from that energy and that mindset, now we shift into helping our children. And that really changes everything. Because when we get furious, our children can see that we're upset, that we're angry. So we are completely dysregulated and they feed off our dysregulation. But when we come from a mindset of curiosity, we are then more calm. And then the child is going, okay, here is this person who's not here to scream, shout, and judge, but here is this person to support me. And so that's what getting curious means. Getting curious means saying, what is going on for my child in this moment and how best can I support my child?
I feel like everyone that's a parent can exactly see that situation, how something so little can easily escalate when we meet that kind of small misbehavior with these big reactions. That's like we're stuck in a power struggle then.
Yeah, and I think the key here is that we need to actually reframe that not as misbehavior, but rather as a child who doesn't yet have the skills in order to start their homework. See, if we come from the perspective that this is misbehavior, then the mindset goes into all of those maladaptive parenting strategies of punishing and yelling and taking away iPhones and taking away screens, and none of that works. Whereas if we come from the mindset that my child doesn't yet have the skills in order to execute the task, now we're coming from a mindset of compassion and understanding, and that's when we can really help our children.
I'm over here nodding aggressively because I love the use of the word yet. I think it totally, it reframes, like you said, our mindset perspective. They don't have these skills yet, and we can help teach them.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the challenge is for parents, and I'll talk a little bit about ADHD parents, is that, you know, we get this diagnosis. We get told that our child has ADHD. We walk out of that doctor's office with the diagnosis, a prescription, and maybe a book, a set of books to read. But no one actually explains to us that ADHD is an executive functioning deficit. Nobody says your child is going to struggle with time management, planning, organization, prioritization, motivation, the ability to recall information. And because we are not given this information, of course, when the child comes home and the child is not doing their homework and you have nothing left in your tank, you're going to get furious. But if you understand truly what ADHD is and you understand that these are skills your child doesn't have yet, now it's much easier to become curious as opposed to furious. So I feel that the missing piece is that when we get a diagnosis, we're not actually told what that diagnosis means, how it's going to manifest in our children. And then the magic thing is, what can you do to support your child? So we as parents, we run around with like a chicken with our head cut off. We're trying everything. Nothing's worked. We're so exhausted. We're so afraid for the future of our child. And everything is a hot damn mess.
Yes, and the executive functions piece is so huge with kids with ADHD. And I see it a lot with kids with autism as well, that missing piece is so essential. And really kids without any diagnosis are struggling with these skills because we expect like, oh, you're in fourth grade, you should have this level of executive functions because we've just decided that, or that's what, you know, siblings had or other classmates have had. But these skills can be really difficult to learn and sometimes need to be directly taught.
Yeah. And I think comparison is the thief of joy, right? Yes. And, you know, I feel like we need to understand each of our children are unique no matter what their diagnoses are. And we have to meet our kids where they are, because the six-year-old today is not going to be the same child at 8 years old. So we really need to tap into where our kids are and ask, what skills does my child need in this moment? And then we, unfortunately, as parents, have to be teaching these skills. And I think the other trouble is that many of us think that, you know, all the accommodations that our kids are getting at school are actually teaching executive functioning skills, but they actually are not. And very often is what happens is with those accommodations, they're actually teaching prompt dependence instead of prompt independence. And so I think as parents, we definitely need to fight for whatever accommodations we our child is able to get. But we have to understand that accommodations are not the holy grail, and accommodations are not going to change things for your child. What's going to change things for your child is you teaching your child time management, organization, planning, and all of those skills.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love this. Okay. I want to go back to that first example you said. We're like, let's go into the house, you know, kid, let's do your homework. We're getting frustrated. And parents, teachers listening, they're like, I want to do what you're saying. I see it rationally right now when I'm listening, but in the moment, it's hard. What advice do you have for parents on taking that kind of pause that you said to switch that framework and mindset?
Yeah. So I think my best advice is you can't practice strategies in the moment. So I find what happens is we say, oh, we really want to be calm and we really want to pause, but we're not practicing. And, you know, planning to fail is failing to plan. So if parents are not out of the moment practicing these strategies, then in the moment, you're not going to be able to do it. So my favorite strategy to practice out of the moment is the stop, drop, and roll. And the stop is, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, is just to shut the fluff up. In that moment, you've just got to pause. You've just got to stop. You're not here to fix, control, shut the fluff up. The D is to drop, and drop is to de-escalate. The only thing you can do in a situation when a child is dysregulated is de-escalate. You cannot offer reason. You cannot offer logic. And you cannot try to get that child to calm down. And then the role is, what in that moment does the parent need to do? And there is an array of things. Sometimes the parent needs to exit the arena because the parent is completely dysregulated and we need to calm down. Sometimes in that moment, what the parent needs to do is to say, okay, well, what help does my child need, and offer that help. And sometimes in the moment, yes, we as parents have to set a limit because the child is so dysregulated, they can't swing themselves back into control. And they actually need us to be the parent who's going to set the limit. But the thing is that if we are not practicing the pause, if we are not practicing stop, drop, and roll throughout the day, when everything falls apart, it's just too late because your body and your mind are not used to practicing that skill. You know, I always say Messi is not able to take penalties and make sure he gets them in because he practices them during a World Cup. He is practicing them over and over and over again until his mind and body are just able to do it automatically. And that's what we as parents need to do. And I know everybody's rolling their eyes and saying, oh my gosh, I don't have time. I'm so burnt out. And trust me, I am you. I totally get it. But here's what I'm going to tell you. In life, we have to pick our hard. So you can pick the hard of maybe finding 3 or 4 opportunities during the day to practice stop, drop, and roll. Or you can pick the hard of having a child who is melting down, you are freaking out, and the whole house is freaking out. So I think as parents, we have to pick our hard.
Yes. And this is going to save you, honestly, just at the least important thing, time. I mean, Obviously we're building skills and we're teaching all these other great things, but it's also going to be a time saver in the long run if you're using this kind of proactive methodology.
100%. And not only that, I think it's also saving your relationship with your child. You know, this goal of getting our kids to 18 is ridiculous. The goal is not 18. The goal is 118. We want them to come back. We want them to feel that they're seen, heard, and understood. We want to nurture and put our relationship first above everything. And if the relationship is one of yelling and threatening and punishing, we really are destroying the most important ingredient, and that is our relationship. So when the parent is able to keep it together, when the parent is able to send a message to the child, I am your safe place, I can handle your emotions, we are really building connection. And at the end of the day, that is the most important thing.
Yes. If you've been stuck on a 6-month wait list for a psychiatrist or bouncing between online mental health sites trying to find the right medication support, Talkiatry was built for you. It's a virtual psychiatric practice that actually fits your life and your insurance. Talkiatry is a 100% online psychiatric practice that provides comprehensive evaluations, diagnoses, and ongoing medication management. Unlike therapy-only sites, Talkiatry is psychiatry. That means that you'll be seeing a medical provider who can diagnose mental health conditions and prescribe medication when appropriate. All of their over 600 clinicians are in network with major insurers, so you can use your existing insurance instead of paying monthly out-of-pocket subscriptions or those out-of-network fees. Head to talkiatry.com/Sasha and complete the short assessment to get matched with an in-network psychiatrist in just a few minutes. That's talkiatry.com/Sasha to get matched in minutes. I have been getting Factor meals delivered for probably a few years now, and when I first discovered these, they were really a game changer. They are fresh meals that get delivered right to my house, pop them in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, I have a healthy, protein-packed lunch all ready to go. I'm like, where were these when I was in the classroom? I like how there's so many different options, so I never get bored, and that I'm eating healthy without having to do a whole ton of cooking. If you are looking to eat healthier, to do takeout less, or to just have something taken off of your plate mentally, having your lunches or dinners set up ready to go, I highly suggest checking out Factor. It's what I have tried, and I really think you would love it too. Head over to factormeals.com/Sasha50off and use code Sasha50off to get 50% off your first Factor box. If you're ready to try this, this is such a great deal. Get 50% off your first Factor box plus free breakfast for a year. Love that. Make healthy easier with Factor.
Okay, talk a little bit about, you just mentioned, you know, setting boundaries at some point, because I teach a very kind of similar approach, but sometimes I'll get feedback or critics that are like, so we're just allowing these negative behaviors, even though that's not what I'm saying. But yeah, there's a, you know, a mindset that, well, we can't just allow these, you know, this old school parenting, classroom management framework of like discipline and things like that. How can we still use an approach that is validating emotions and building skills while maintaining boundaries? It's not that we're allowing chaos.
Yeah, beautiful. So I always say to parents, if you think about parenting as the wings of two doves, and in order for that dove to fly, both wings need to work. The first wing is connection. It's empathy. It's validating how a person is feeling. Validating is not saying I agree. It's saying I want to understand what is happening for you. Once you have validated, then you use the second wing. And the second wing is containment. It is boundaries and it is limit setting. I think the challenge in this discussion is that people don't understand what a boundary is. So people think a boundary is getting the kid to do something. The boundary is not getting the kid. The boundary is what I, the parent, am going to do every single time that behavior happens, irrespectively of what my child does. And I think that we as parents have to understand that we need to have rules and we need to have structure, because we are the front part of our kid's brain, whether your child is neurotypical or not, is not fully developed until the age of 30. They don't have the ability to make decisions, to problem solve. And so we need to actually step in as their frontal lobe. And the way in which we step in at that frontal lobe until their frontal lobe is developed is by having limits and boundaries. So that doesn't mean we don't acknowledge how they're feeling. You can acknowledge how they're feeling, but there are limits. Let's talk about screen time. Screen time, we know that screens are not great for our kids. I don't believe in confiscating screens and taking them out of their home. I have teens and that doesn't work. But we need to have limits about screen time. We need to have boundaries. How much screen time our kids are going to have. We can empathize with them when they're freaking out and upset because, yes, they're playing their games. They don't want to get off. I can sit in that feeling with you. I can feel your anger. I can feel your frustration. But the rule in our house is we have X amount of screen time. You've used up that screen time. That's it, folks. Now it's game over. So that's how we can have both. Beautiful empathy. I understand you're frustrated. Let's sit in that frustration. But the limit was set, and that's how the house is structured.
That's a great example because, I mean, you're right. That decision-making skill is not there, understanding the long-term consequences as a 10-year-old, 11-year-old that they're like, no, I need 7 hours of screen time. That's the decision I make. But we know that that's not the right, the productive and effective choice for them. So we have to support them with establishing those limits.
Cool. And I also think it's really important as parents that we communicate what the rules are and that the child is well aware. And not only do we communicate, because we know, particularly with neurodivergent kids, you know, verbal goes in one ear and out the other. So it doesn't stick. So therefore, we also have to make sure that whatever those expectations are, that they are visual, and that the child can see them.
What are some simple ways that you teach parents to use a visual in a household?
Yeah, so it really depends upon the age and stage of your child. So let's just talk about if you have a younger kid, say under 10, and then we'll talk about 10 and over. So let's assume that you're having real struggles getting your child out of bed in the morning. They don't follow their morning routine. You're literally exhausted every morning. Get your shoes. Have you brushed your teeth? Why haven't you done this? And it's just absolutely exhausting, and it can really burn out a parent. So 10 and under, what I teach is a tool called visual scaffolding. And visual scaffolding is taking a picture of the child doing the task in the order of the task that the child does, putting that on a poster board, and every room that the child is going into, they are able to see themselves and knowing what task they need to do. when we see a picture, the brain is able to hold onto an image more than words. And when you see yourself doing it, you're able to create something called a mental movie in your mind so that you're able to actually see yourself doing the task. So that's the strategy for 10 and under. So that's how I would make things visual. You're not going to be taking a picture of your 16-year-old doing their morning task because they're going to be, this is the dumbest thing, and they are right. So for a 16-year-old, you want to use something else. So that visual might be where you have an analog clock in the bathroom and you have a post-it note that says 7:35, you need to be out. That's how you could do it for a teenager. You could have in the kitchen next to the analog clock, you know, 7:55, you need to have your lunch packed. So that's how you could make it visual for a teen or tween.
I think that sometimes visuals sound intimidating, but they can be so simple, just like post-its by your clock or snapping some pictures on your phone and printing them. They don't have to be an intimidating thing.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that we ask our kids what will work for you. You know, I have three kids with ADHD, and they all require different supports and strategies. So I have one kid who loves post-it notes. I have one kid who loves a whiteboard. I have another kid who likes voice notes. So I think we really need to ask our kids what will work for you and then be prepared to experiment. And I think what happens with parents is we'll listen to a webinar and we'll listen to a podcast. This is great and I'm going to try it. And we try and the kids are like, oh, this is dumb. I don't want to do it. And we simply give up. So I think we also have to understand that this is a process and we have to experiment and we have to tweak, but we don't just give up just because that strategy is not working the way in which we had envisioned it.
That buy-in piece is so huge, I think, especially with like 10 and over, where you're right. If you like do a certain strategy, they might be like, you know, this is cringy. I hate it. But if you're asking for feedback, what they're into, you're immediately going to start off from a position of buy-in and more into it because they've helped suggest it.
Yeah, listen, buy-in is the most important strategy. And I think the most important way in which we get buy-in with teens and tweens is your teen and tween is not going to listen to you if you are not listening to them. And I think what happens is as our kids become teen and tweens, our fear of the future goes up a thousandfold. And now we try to control and we try to micromanage and we're not hearing them. And this causes disconnection in the relationship. And the only way in which to really listen to what your child is saying is to really use collaborative problem solving, where the child is able to share their concern, you are able to share your concern, and together as a team, you come up with a solution that you try, you meet up the next week and you tap in, did this work, did it not, and you tweak. But that's the only way you're going to get buy-in from a teen and a tween. If you go in with a teen and a tween with a heavy hand, we're going to do this and these are the rules and these are the expectations, it's literally going to be game over.
Yes. You talked a little bit, and I think this is probably why someone would come in with this heavy hand, about kind of the regulation status of the parent. Like, hey, your decision in that role might be, I need a break because I'm dysregulated. I think we don't talk about that enough, like parents and teachers too. Like, they're not robots. Like, we have emotions on all of this. We're frustrated. We're burnt out, tired. Can you talk a little bit about helping manage your own emotions in these situations and maybe when certain behaviors are a trigger? Because I know for me as a parent, there's certain things like that I'm great with and then other behaviors that I'm like, oh, like that gets under my skin.
Yeah, I think, I think I always say to parents, have you ever been to a boxing match where there's one boxer? Never in the history of mankind, because you need two to have the boxing match. And it's exactly the same in our homes. If we exit the arena, there's no one to box. And so exiting the arena is for you to say, listen, I just can't deal with this right now. And that's okay. And to simply say to your child, I'm feeling overwhelmed right now. So I need to take a break. I'm just going to go and put water on my face and then I will come back and we can continue the discussion. What that does is two things. One, we know motion moves emotion. So by you exiting, by you walking away, you're starting to regulate. And number two, that dysregulated child, they don't feel good about themselves. They know what they're doing is not correct. they just have this absolute cloud of shame. And now when we stay in the ring and the spotlight is on them, the behavior is only going to get worse. So when we exit the arena, we actually give the child the time to actually self-regulate. And we know motions take 90 seconds to move through the body. It takes 90 minutes in our house because we stay in the arena and we put the spotlight on the child. And either we try to fix or control, and all of that makes the spotlight even brighter and the child reacts. So we as parents, and this is so hard, have to have that ability to say, I can't do this right now, and simply walk away.
Yes. Now, what happens if you don't? What happens if you stay in that arena and you make, you know, the human choice that happens sometimes?
Yeah, beautiful.
What's the process of kind of coming back from that, of repair, of, you know what, I lost my temper. We've all been there. And I yelled, or I did an empty threat. I did something that, you know, broke down that relationship. What advice do you have on that follow-up?
So my first advice is this. 6 out of 10, you're not going to get out of the ring. And that's just life. And we just need to accept it because we are all a work in progress.
You just made everyone feel so much better by saying that. By the way.
Like, oh. Yeah, 6 out of 10, you're going to screw up. And that's life. You're a work in progress. And I think we just need to give ourselves some grace and some compassion. And 4 out of 10, yeah, you know what? You're going to rock it. You're going to get it right. You're going to feel proud of yourself. So the 6 out of 10. To me, the gold is in the repair for so many reasons. Number one, your kid is going to mess up. Your kid learns more from you modeling what to do when you mess up than you giving them a lecture. So by you owning what you have done, by you apologizing, you're showing your child that when we mess up, we own it. Second of all, you can then actually model what your child should do when they are dysregulated. So if you go to your kid and you say, listen, oh my gosh, yesterday you just wanted me to listen and I went into mommy nag lecture fix it mode. I need to own my shit right here, right now. I need to apologize to you. What I should have done is I should have shut the fluff up. Now what you've done is you've shown the kid what you need to do when you are dysregulated. You're showing your kid how to be accountable. And I know some parents are probably rolling their eyes and thinking, oh my gosh, that's not going to work. But as a parent to young adults now, all of this that I did, owning my shit, apologizing, they are like sponges. They are literally mopping up what you are doing. Even when they flip their hoodies, even when they give you that look, they are learning. And that is what they will do.
And you might not see that progress right away. Like in that moment, they might not be like, oh my gosh, mom, you're right. I forgive you. Yeah, they might roll their eyes, walk away. But it's a week later, a month later, a year later that you're going to see the benefits of that.
Yeah, correct. I think the delusional part of parenting is, for example, when we set a boundary, we actually expect the kid to go, oh, mom, thank you. That's amazing. Or when we come and we apologize, oh, mom, you're the best. Or when we sat there and we've made the most unbelievable meal and they come to the table and they got that scowling look and they're eating that. And you're like, oh my gosh, can someone please say thank you? Can someone please acknowledge? And then we get upset and we have this like Hollywood version of what families are supposed to be. And I think we need to ditch Hollywood and come to the reality. And the reality is they're not going to thank you now because they're not capable. If you've got a teen or a tween, sorry, they are selfish. They only think about themselves. The way in which you breathe is incorrectly. Everything you do is wrong. That's being a teen or a tween. But when they get into their 20s, that's when they're going to be able to appreciate it. So you hold the fort, you continue with the love, you continue with that beautiful compassion, you continue to give because you are laying the foundation for a lifetime of a relationship with your child.
Oh, I love what you said earlier. Like it's not the goal till 18, it's till 118 because you're right. Those teens, like that's developmentally where they're at. And you're going to have all of this relationship and rapport and this great human after.
Correct. And you know, listen, we know that the shit will hit the fan because that's life, whether your child has a diagnosis or not. For parents with ADHD, we know that our kids have a higher propensity for addiction, whether that's drugs, alcohol, porn, excessive gaming, shopping. And the studies are very clear. The antidote to addiction is connection. So the more connected you are to your child, when they experience that turbulence, hopefully if you have that strong bond, they're going to come to you. Now, that doesn't guarantee they're not going to be going to drugs or porn or whatever, but you have a higher probability of the kid coming to you to get help than going to those maladaptive sources if you have worked on that connection. You know, I always say, you know, when we, the number one thing that we as parents need to be doing is bathing our children in oxytocin. And oxytocin is that love drug. It is the bonding. It is the attunement. It is the connection. And the more you can bathe your child in that oxytocin, the more you are really protecting your child's mental health. You're creating resilience. It really is the key to parenting all children.
Oh, so good. I love that. Such very, it feels very motivational too, in a good way.
Good.
But I think, you know, kind of even circling back to what we said earlier, it can be misconstrued. Like, we're going to let them do whatever they want, but still same thing. Like you talked about earlier with those boundaries, with teaching the missing skills, all of these things can coexist at the same time. And I find sometimes that that's the misunderstanding, especially when I teach this to teachers. Well, I can't just let them walk all over me in the classroom, but, you know, rising to that level of emotion is not going to solve the problem in the moment or long term.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we need to look at the 60 years of behavior research, and the behavior research clearly shows, study after study. So let's just go back to the science, that punitive model, that punishment model, that model of giving attention to the negative behavior doesn't change behavior, it makes it worse. We know that the model of discipline, and what is discipline? Discipline is teaching. Well, if you're teaching, it's like, you know, if your kid falls off their bike, you don't scream and shout and how dare you and why don't you? And I'm going to send you to the room for the rest of your life because you fell off the bike. Oh, no. Kindness, compassion, we practice and we practice. And when they fall off, we might be like, oh my gosh, why can't you do this? But, you know, we're supportive. So it's exactly the same thing. We are teaching our kids to ride a bike. This bike is called life. So we need to give them grace. But of course, we don't let our kid ride a bike without a helmet. Mm-hmm. There's the boundary, right? But we can still be kind when they fall off their bike.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. We still need the supports there, but that punishment, and it's hard because a lot of school-based systems are rooted almost entirely in punishment. You do this, you get a detention, you get expelled, you get sent to the principal's office, and it's so frustrating. We see these kids, like I say, like frequent flyers. They're in and out of the office, and it's, well, yeah, of course, because this method is not working, and no one in the school is changing that.
You know, it's really heartbreaking. And I think if we look at school system today, our schools are still based on a model for an industrial revolution. Well, we're 100 years into a whole new world, and that structure and those techniques do not work. And the school system really hasn't changed. And I think it's really hard for parents, but I also think it's hard for teachers, because I think what we're seeing in a lot of school districts is that teachers have no control and they're not allowed to do anything. And if they do anything, then parents go up in arms. And so it's kind of we're all stuck in this sort of this cesspool of things that are not working. And I think what we need to do is not get into the blame, the school's responsible, the teacher, the parents, the child, and say, you know what, blame doesn't work. All blame does is create more chaos. So, okay, what can we do to change things? How can parents and teachers and the school all work together to make things better for kids? Because I truly believe that teachers start this profession because they want to inspire learning. So they're coming from a beautiful place. The system is putting that flame out. And so we as a community have to come together and say, how best can we support everybody?
And sometimes it's just those, you know, little moments. I often have parents that ask, well, what do you think about this school or this district or this? And I go, it almost doesn't matter. It's the teacher. If you've got a great teacher that's willing to understand your child and take those even little moments, baby steps, and celebrate them, it could be in what, it doesn't matter what school. It's always to me more about the teacher.
100%. And it all goes back to the same thing. It's that connection. It's that child feeling seen, heard, and understood in the classroom. And I think particularly for our kids with ADHD or autism, people don't understand the child. So they label them as the behavior problem. And I truly believe that these kids almost have a sixth sense. They can pick up who likes them and doesn't like them. So if I'm sitting in the classroom and I have a teacher who thinks I'm the behavior problem, and even though she may not be saying that, her body language, her tone of voice is all communicating that to me, I'm going to become the behavior problem.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. And so it all goes back to where we started. It all starts with really helping teachers to understand your child. Like I always say to parents, the most useless thing you can say to me is my child has ADHD. They go, what? Well, what does that mean? It tells me nothing, because what it tells me is the narrative that social media has created, the behavior child, the child who can't focus. And none of that is true as to what ADHD is. I say to parents, you have to walk into that meeting and say, my child has ADHD. This is what it looks like in them. And this is how they need to be supported. Now you've empowered that teacher. And honestly, in my experience, when a teacher is given tools, she wants to use them because she wants to have a class that runs properly. And I think the problem is, again, we go back to that first thing. The minute you walk out of that doctor's office, you're set up to fail. Here's your diagnosis. Here's your prescription. Here's a bunch of books. Good luck.
Yeah. Right? Well, I love that you are here sharing practical strategies that teachers, parents can use right away, because that's what's going to make the difference. Where can people go to learn more from you, Allison?
Yeah, so a couple of places. You can find me on Instagram at Allison Lee Solomon. And if you want to follow me on TikTok, sorry, I have to look up my TikTok handle if you can believe such a thing. It's at ADHD underscore mama 777. And people can also find me at www.allisonsolomon.com.
Great. I will put that all in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining me. I absolutely love talking to you. I could go on and on forever. I have literally been nodding the entire half an hour. So I so appreciate you taking the time to be here today.
Thank you, Sasha. It's been a lovely conversation, and I hope your listeners are walking away with hope and some tools to implement.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening. Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum, everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.